the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This episode of the Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Paracast. That's audiblepodcast.com/Paracast. And now, on with the show. This week, we're joined by two co-hosts. Two for the price of one. And of course, since we don't charge for the show, that means that you get two without paying an extra dime. We have Nicholas Redfern, and we have Christopher O'Brien, and later on in the show, we'll be talking to David Hatcher Childress about his latest book called Yetis, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants. Now, we know the co-hosts all have other lives other than the show. They don't spend 24/7 working with me. If they did, they'd be very poor. So they have to have real lives in addition to this kind of life. And so I'll ask you, Chris, what have you been working on recently? What are your plans?
Lots of video. Actually, I've been helping produce a retro drive-in double feature series. We're up to about five titles. And, working on chasing down some reports from the San Luis Valley. I have a very interesting case that occurred about 3 weeks ago that happened to some visitors, a couple visiting from Rome, and they were staying in the valley and had a very interesting experience in a guest house where a super bright object circled the house and very close proximity. And some 20 minutes later, I have an unrelated report very similar from about 15 miles south near the Great Sand Dunes that has a very similar description. So
would you describe the geography better for our listeners as to precisely what we're talking about in case they're looking over their Google Maps or something?
Right. Well, the San Luis Valley is the world's largest alpine valley. It's located in south central Colorado and kind of geologically extends down into New Mexico. And about the halfway point on the east side of the valley is the world's most mysterious sand dune desert, and it seems to be the kind of the bullseye spot in the San Luis Valley for a lot of very interesting reports. The Crestone area is about 15 miles north of there, and these two events happened within about a half hour, 20 minutes of one another, very similar sounding descriptions. I'm tracking down witnesses to the second event. I've been in contact now with the couple from Rome. They're back in Italy. I'm going to be doing an interview with them and getting the particulars of these events figured out. The other event had quite a number of witnesses. It was a group of campers down at the Great Sand Dunes. So that's one of actually a number of reports that I'm working on. And I'm also getting ready to do a trip up there. I'm going to be speaking at the Angel Fire Conference that Nick actually and Greg spoke at last year. I'll be there this year. That's this coming weekend.
That's an interesting question here. When you do these kinds of sessions where you speak before an audience, what kind of preparation do you do, or do you have kind of a fixed slideshow or something?
Well, I've got five or six different talks that I can do. I do have PowerPoint presentations for each of them. I'm the only regional person at this year's conference, so I'll be doing my standard San Luis Valley presentation, which normally runs about two and a half hours. I'm going to have to cut it back to about an hour and a half.
So are you available to give speeches around the country? They have to obviously pay your plane fare or send you an airplane. Right. If you want to do a lecture over at Apple headquarters, Steve Jobs has a jet.
Yeah, he can just fly me over. I don't do that many conferences. I'm not really on the A-list for conference speakers, because a lot of what I have to say is heretical in the UFO community. I think that might have some impact, but I have spoken at least a dozen conferences over the years. I average about one or two a year, probably.
Nick Redfern, you are always writing 100 books at a time. So how do you sort it out? What have you been working on recently? What are you working on in the near future?
Well, actually, right now, I have a new book out called Final Events, which is probably going to be a very, perhaps the most controversial UFO-related book I've ever written. For about the last 4 years, I've been hot on the trail of almost like a think tank type group within the government that has investigated the UFO phenomenon very, very clandestinely for many years, but has, I guess, gone under the radar and has concluded that UFOs exist, but totally dismisses the extraterrestrial hypothesis and concludes that these things are quite literally demonic. And when I say literally demonic, I do mean literally like the minions of Satan preparing for Armageddon, and that the whole abduction UFO angle is like a smoke screen, a deception. Now, of course, there are a lot of people within the, in the UFO research field over the years who supported this theory, you know, who concluded that there's something, I guess, occult-driven about the subject. What hasn't really been written about too much until now is the fact that there are people within government who have, I guess, organized bodies and meetings that have come to this conclusion.
Demonic? Really?
Yeah, literally, yeah. I mean, a number of books have been written on this subject. There was a guy named Nelson Pacheco and Tommy Bland. They wrote one in the 1990s called Unmasking the Enemy. Throughout the years, there's probably been six or seven books that cover this whole area. The idea that, you know, we're just being geared up for Armageddon and the aliens aren't what they appear to be. But again, when you sort of, I guess, find that there are people in government who have prepared files and had meetings and clandestinely interviewed abductees, the best way I can describe it, it almost comes across as like a radical extremist fundamentalist MJ-12 type organization, something like that, where they're very much belief driven by the fact that they hold these beliefs, some of them, in the first place, prior to becoming members of the group. So in other words, it's kind of like, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg, the conclusions or the belief system. And that's one of the things I stress in the book as well.
Wow. Boy, talk about heretical. I thought I was heretical.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird story because...
I better watch how I use that term.
Yeah. One of the things that the people actually talk about is this whole angle of, well, if aliens exist, why aren't they coming here to destroy us or to save us? And according to this group, neither scenario fulfills the real modus operandi, if you like. And according to them, what they've concluded is going on is that the aliens, quote aliens, however you want to term them, literal demons, fallen angels, don't want to destroy us, but they don't want to help us, obviously. What they actually conclude is that the Earth itself, in the form it is now, essentially is a farm, and that upon our death, they harvest human souls as like a life force. And it almost comes across as like a Matrix scenario where we live this life, and then the next life, there is no next life. Almost like describing as a form of like archaic technology that's driven by ancient rite and ritual rather than machines. And they talk about the idea of human souls being harvested for this poorly understood life energy that these entities are supposed to feed upon. So in other words, they don't want to destroy the planet. They actually want us to keep on living as we are because we're the equivalent of a farm that they feed upon. And again, you know, that's a highly controversial theory. But, you know, the idea of recycling souls is something that has actually come up on a number of occasions within abduction research. It's just, you know, some researchers have viewed it from a positive perspective, others haven't.
Well, we know Dr. David Jacobs talks of hybrids, and we can get into that. That's almost an entirely different discussion. So this book is coming out when?
This will be out in about 4 days' time, and it's called Final Event.
Final Event, and by the way, that means this book will be available when you hear this episode, and we'll have Nick back to talk more about it, because we're really curious. But today, we have a totally different subject, or maybe not. We're going to be talking about the book by David Hatcher Childress called Yetis, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants. Chris, kind of give us a quick overview before we bring David on.
Sure, Gene. This is a subject that I've always had quite a fascination with personally, having grown up in the Pacific Northwest. And David, too, from very early on when he was, I think, about 10, Roger Patterson came to his school and did a presentation. And this was prior to his famous, of course, footage from Bluff Creek that everyone has seen a zillion times. And I think that particular presentation kind of sparked a real interest in David in this subject. And in the intervening years now, he's traveled all over the world. And one of the things that he's constantly open to and is always curious about is reports of hairy giants and Sasquatches, Bigfoot, however you want to call them. And in the East, of course, they're called Yetis. And he's had an interest in this subject and is one of the people that I think has more knowledge about the Eastern version, the Yeti from Asia, than anyone that I've encountered. And his recent book is just packed filled with just wonderful stories and accounts that go all the way back into the Middle Ages even of these very enigmatic creatures. And we're going to have a really good time, I think, discussing this with him.
David Hatcher Childress coming up next on
The Paracast.
Yeah. As you know, the PowerCast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks. With more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers, for listeners of the PowerCast, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One book to consider, for example, is Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up by Timothy Good. Timothy Good, as you know, has been a guest on the PowerCast. Yet another book worth considering from Audible.com is Lies and Deception, UFOs and the Secret Agenda, from Timothy Good once again, and also from our old friend Nick Pope. As you know, Nick Pope has also been on the PowerCast. This is another book that you're definitely going to want to check out. For this book or another free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/powercast. That's audiblepodcast.com/powercast.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
If the cost of your prescriptions are getting out of control, you want to listen carefully to this. RxDrugCard.com is a simple, innovative program designed to give individuals the same purchasing power as large HMOs and insurance companies. As a member of RxDrugCard.com, you'll enjoy savings of up to 80% on all prescription medications at over 52,000 USA pharmacies, including Walmart, Walgreens, and Eckerd's. Don't risk ruining your health by using cheap, counterfeit foreign drugs. This program provides savings on safe, genuine, FDA-approved medications. With low membership fees, unlimited use, no age or income requirements, and coverage for all pre-existing conditions, RxDrugCard.com is an absolute must for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. Enroll today for as little as $4.50 per month at www.RxDrugCard.com and start saving immediately. RxDrugCard.com is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit RxDrugCard.com or call 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461.
And now for another exciting minute from Life Change Tea. To all our Life Change Tea customers, it's sale time! Buy three, get one free. Buy three packages of Life Change Tea and get one package absolutely free. Now to all of you that have not tried Life Change Tea, here's your chance! Buy three, get one free! Clean toxins and chemicals inside your body. Lose inches off your waist and you could lose that excess weight that's been driving you crazy. And with our buy three, get one free sale, it's a great time to order. So here's how. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Look for our special. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. It feels good to be clean, and it feels good to lose weight, and it really feels good to save money. So order now at GetTheTea.com.
On air, online, and on demand.
They say we offer simple answers to complex problems.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We are joined for his second visit on the Paracast by David Hatcher Childress. His recent book is Yetis, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants, one among many books that he's published and written over the years. Our co-hosts this week are Nicholas Redfern and Chris O'Brien. Now, David, How did you become interested in looking for strange creatures, specifically Yetis, Sasquatch, and hairy giants?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in cryptozoology and just zoology and unknown animals. But when I was in high school, junior high school, actually, in Durango, Colorado, Roger Patterson came to our high school, and it was 1967 or something, and gave a presentation. This was before he had taken, in fact, his famous Bluff Creek, California, Bigfoot footage. So he was really talking about stuff from his early book. His book, Do Abominable Snowmen of America Really Exist, was for sale, and I bought a copy, probably got him to autograph it even, and that got me going, really. From then on out, I bought other books on Bigfoot and on UFOs and paranormal, and even books like Chariots of the Gods by Eric Von Däniken, and now I'm the author myself of over 20 books. How about that?
Now, with regard to strange creatures, how did you do your investigation? Did you look up written information? Did you go on the scene, on site, to talk to people? How did you do it?
Well, most of my research is done through books and the Internet and interviewing people. With regard to Yetis and to Bigfoot to a point, I've gone on certain expeditions and trips myself. I've been to Nepal a number of times, and on those trips I've gone into Yeti areas. I've talked to Sherpas and other people who've claimed to have seen Yetis or taken photographs of footprints and things like that. And as my book on Yeti, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants, much of that book towards the end is about really lesser-known Bigfoot and skunk ape reports throughout the United States, including Illinois and Arkansas, Florida, all over the eastern parts of the U.S., and one of my own personal investigations there was with the DuPont Monster, which is a well-known Bigfoot case in Seneca, Illinois, which is really just 60, 70 miles southwest of Chicago.
Now, in the course of this investigation, did you find anything that would lead you to believe that there were a fair number or any reasonable number of hoaxes being perpetrated here?
I certainly think that there are Bigfoot hoaxes being, perpetrated, and particularly when you go on the Internet and look at some of the photos and video footage there, it's clear that a lot of it's actually a hoax. And it's finding, the truth that's out there, shall we say. It's not my opinion, though, that, people who report Bigfoot encounters, skunk ape encounters, or Yeti encounters for that matter, are fakers or people who are making up stories for their own, for themselves or something. Most Bigfoot stories that I've come across seem to be genuine, and mainly because the people have no real reason to be deceptive. I've found, really, that people are reluctant to tell their stories about Bigfoot, largely because they think that their friends and others won't believe them. And it makes them look stupid and kind of foolish, kind of dumb. Oh, you saw Bigfoot, or this or that happened. And so in my mind, the people who actually come out and say, yeah, this is what I saw, I mean, they're bucking the trend. And actually, they're being brave by saying, I know what I saw, and this is what happened to me.
Now, let's look at the background of the legends of strange creatures. Now, at the beginning of the book, you're talking about the giants in the Bible and elsewhere. So before we see if there's any connection, what were these giants all about?
Those stories of giants and wild men of yore, Bigfoot, of course, it's often said to be 8, 9, 10, 12 feet tall, making them, of course, literal giants. We get many stories of giants, like in the Bible, the famous story of David and Goliath, of course, the sons of God, Anakim and Nephilim and things like that. They were apparently 10, 12 feet tall. Stories of giants have always fascinated me, and it's my belief that people were taller in ancient times, and we've been getting shorter over the years. But my research there with the giants was really to bring out the early stories of wild men. And they're often giants too. And that these guys who are living on the edge of civilization, they're humans, but they're not completely human. Cavemen, as you might say, Neanderthals, perhaps. In some cases, they're just perhaps crazy people who've been outcast from society and now live deep in the woods without clothing, sort of a village idiot kind of a thing. And, I mean, this is a real phenomenon. We, particularly in Europe, in the Middle Ages, stories of wild men were very common. And the idea that some of these guys were, of course, unusually tall, like Bigfoot. And the big question there with wild men and hairy giants, in a sense, is whether they're really humans or whether they're these ape men, which is kind of what Sasquatch and Yetis appear to be. They're humans, in a sense, but very hairy. They're stronger than us. In my book, I'm probably getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but yeah, there's even stories of Sasquatch and Yetis mating with humans, both with males and female humans, mating with male and female Yetis and Bigfoot.
We heard about in the Bible about giants mating with human women, quote unquote, but wouldn't it also be kind of unusual here about the fact that I got the impression that the giants of old were fairly advanced beings, but then we're talking about Neanderthals and other primitive beings. So isn't there some kind of contradiction or line of demarcation here?
Well, sure. And that's a good point. Yeah, the supposed sons of God who were giants, yeah, they were then advanced beings rather than hairy ape men or something. And in fact, you could argue that these guys, spaceships and all kinds of advanced technology. And so those kind of giants and just other human giants. And I even at the end of that chapter, I run through even some of the modern giants and giantesses that we know about and have been measured. And part of, you know, my study with that was to look at people, total humans, who were just unusually tall, but were well proportioned.
I'll tell you what, we'll get into that in a moment, David. We have David Hatcher Childress. He's author of Yeti, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants. The co-host this week, we have two of them, Nick Redfern, Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Okay, neighbors, here's the problem. Face-to-face business meetings with clients and colleagues are always going to be important. But business travel is a hassle, and it's often a complete waste of money. Well, here's a solution for you. Do more, travel less with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is an award-winning online meeting service brought to you by Citrix. With just a click, host sales presentations, training sessions, or product demos right from your own desk. Avoid the hassle of traveling and still exceed your sales goals. Plus, GoToMeeting is just $49 a month for unlimited online meetings. Plus, voice over IP and phone conferencing is included. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Once again, GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one, because everything you need at Military Surplus is at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com, one of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to MainMilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99, complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories, finish and M10 gas masks are 3 for $30, and Swiss filters are 3 for $12. Searching for Strike Anywhere matches? MaineMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E Military.com, or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MaineMilitary.com, the Maine name in military supply.
If you've taken the drug Reglan, this message is for you.
If you or a family member has taken the drug Reglan and have been diagnosed with tardive dyskinesia, call the Goldwater Law Firm right now.
I'm attorney Bob Goldwater. If you or a loved one has taken Reglan and now have tardive dyskinesia, call us right now. You may be entitled to financial compensation.
If you've taken the drug Reglan and have been diagnosed with tardive dyskinesia, call 1-800-272-2300. That's 1-800-272-2300. 1-800-272-2300.
This is an attorney advertisement. The Goldwater Law Firm is located at 15849 North 71st Street in Scottsdale, Arizona. We are licensed to practice law only in Arizona, but we associate with other attorneys throughout the country. While we maintain joint responsibility, cases of this type are referred to other attorneys for principal responsibility. Free background information is available upon request. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome. Not available in all states.
That's 1-800-272-2300.
I have a very important announcement from our friends at eFoods Direct. Please pay close attention. Due to rapidly rising food costs, eFoods Direct must raise their prices. However, until September 20th, our current supplies are gone, whichever comes first, eFoods Direct is making a special offer to our listeners. It's the eFoods Direct pre-price increase special. Since 2008, wholesale food costs have risen dramatically, yet eFoods Direct has refused to pass these increases on to you. Unfortunately, they can no longer absorb the recent surge in costs, and have no choice but to raise prices. Until September 20th, our supplies on hand are gone, whichever comes first. Not only can you take advantage of the current lower prices, but for every 3 selected items that you buy, eFoods Direct will give you 1 free. That's right, buy 3, get 1 free. It's your last chance to get in on the huge savings. Act now. On the web at eFoodsDirect.com or call 1-800-409-5633. That's eFoodsDirect.com on the web or call 800-409-5633.
How do you spell hard-hitting talk radio? G-C-N, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
This is Philip Rogno. You're listening to Paracast, one of the most informative shows out there. So listen closely.
We return with David Hatcher Childress, author of 20 books, including Yeti, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants, one of his most recent titles. We're talking about the strange, large creatures of old and maybe to the present day. Our co-hosts this week are Chris O'Brien and Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Nick, you had some questions.
Yeah, I mean, having read the book, David, I thought it was just a great addition, not least for the one reason being the huge size of the book for the listeners. It's almost 400 pages long and has some excellent and very little known artwork contained in the book, particularly a lot of color photographs. I think that's one of the things that's going to greatly appeal to people. But one of the things that's kind of come up when Gene was talking, you know, was this, I won't say contradiction, but the angle that some of these creatures in history, you know, come across as very intelligent and advanced, others less so. And I was wondering, from your perspective and the research you've done, do you feel that creatures like Bigfoot, the Yeti, etc., need to be classed separately until we understand what they are, rather than all being offshoots of the same creature, if you like? In other words, do you think we could be actually looking at several different types of mystery ape?
Yes, sure. No, I very much agree with that. And even Yetis, there are 3 or 4 different types of Yetis, different colors, different sizes. There's a smaller one that's only, you know, 4 or 5 feet tall. I mean, they're actually a little bit smaller than a human. I think that the ones like the Orang Penek in Sumatra and parts of Malaysia, this is also probably also a slightly different species, more akin to an orangutan, particularly with, say, Bigfoot in North America. The most famous stories are really from the Pacific Northwest, and the Bigfoot there is really probably the largest of all of these creatures, it seems. And these guys are genuinely huge, and giants by that kind of reckoning, where you could easily encounter some being that's 9-10 feet tall. When you look at more the skunk apes of the southern states and in the swamps, they're clearly smaller animals and more about the size of a human. You have different colors of fur. Reddish brown is often, the most common color that they're said to be, but they can be very dark, even grayish. And then you have the stories, which I find particularly fascinating, of these white-haired Bigfoots that are commonly seen. And they appear to be some kind of elderly, cast out Bigfoot who's been kind of like lions do this, where the younger lions force the old lions out of the pride and they have to become like a rogue lion hunting for themselves. And it even appears that this happens with Bigfoot. And some of the encounters, I believe, of some of the Bigfoot who really do range close to civilization, start dumpster diving and things like that, are these older rogue Bigfoot, and they're often, pure white. This one that was seen recently in North Carolina was on the news. This was in June, I guess it was, and all the major news networks carried this. And it was this mountain man up in the hills of North Carolina, and he called the police claiming two close encounters with what he described as a 10-foot tall, white-haired Bigfoot. And curiously with that, he claimed that Bigfoot had six fingers on each hand. And that goes back to the Bible, which is curious, where some of the Philistines and these giants of the Bible, they were also said to have six fingers on each hand. How about that?
And I guess, kind of, again, on the angle of what these creatures are, I mean, I think one of the things that's sort of one of the themes that runs through many of these accounts is that these creatures are highly elusive, whether it's in the Himalayas, in the Pacific Northwest, in Europe. And I wondered if you felt the image of these creatures just being sort of dumb animals that have managed to hide from society conveniently for so long is valid, or do you think the fact that we're still looking for them suggests that mentally, in some respects at least, they might be highly evolved, and that has some bearing on the fact that we're still scratching our heads while they're still running around doing their thing?
Well, right. I think it's both those in a sense. They are highly evolved, I believe, in that their hearing and sight and sense of smell are very, very keen. They're nocturnal. They avoid humans at all costs, virtually. They do. What I found in my book as I was researching it, particularly in all the things in the eastern United States, was that these skunk apes, these Bigfoot Sasquatch guys, the grass man, that they do live within areas that are relatively fairly inhabited and populated. Well, I mean, I think even my own impression originally was that Bigfoot and Yeti lived in the most remote mountain forests, and I mean, gosh, there's up in British Columbia and Washington State and Northern California even, and there's huge, vast forests, massive wilderness areas where all kinds of, unknown creatures could live. But when you start thinking that just swamps and forests in Illinois and New Jersey and Pennsylvania, North Carolina can also have these creatures, that's where you start to really sort of raise an eyebrow and think, wow, are there really these large unknown animals, these ape men, living in such close proximity to humans and civilization? And what I've come to the conclusion is that yes, they are. And they're practically in your backyard. They're sneaking around late at night. They take the most darkest little ravines and river streams, to get to whatever, some orchard where they want to pick peaches, and that was one of the stories in my book, to even, like I say, dumpster diving, or sometimes they're just crossing a road from one side of a swamp to another, and someone on a, you know, late at night is coming down that highway and catches a Bigfoot in the headlights kind of thing. And it all happens very quickly. People often, you know, they're startled, they don't know what they've seen, they will often call the police, or they tell their parents, or they suddenly turn around and go to the police department, tell this amazing story of what's all happened to them, and for a day or two it's on the local radio station, even gets into the newspaper, and then everybody forgets about it again.
And do you think these creatures are more ape than human, or the other way around, or is it somewhere in between, do you think?
That the apes are human?
No.
What? I didn't get that.
Okay. Do you think these creatures are more ape than human, or more, I guess, like primitive humans than ape? Or is it somewhere in between?
Well, somewhere in between, but they are, they're very similar to humans, of course, and people, when they first see them, often mistake them for a human, except they're not wearing any clothes, they're large, they're hairy, of course. And they do, they look like monsters, but still have this human semblance. Mm-hmm. When you look at the genetics of apes, and I'm not some expert on apes, really, but I certainly looked into it a little bit in my research, but orangutans are one chromosome away from being a human. And that one chromosome is significant, but orangutans and humans, in theory, could mate and create some sort of half-breed human orangutan.
I'll tell you what, we'll have to get into the interbreeding and all the other possibilities in our next section. We have David Hatcher Childress. We're talking about his most recent book, Yeti, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants. We have two co-hosts for the price of one, Nicholas Redfern and Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey neighbors, have you been thinking about starting a website? Well, I'm going to tell you about a great offer from HostGator. HostGator is a world-famous leader in web hosting, and they make it easy for you to get your own .com domain name. You create your very own website with their free site builder tools and great selection of templates. Use the coupon code PARACAST. Once again, use the coupon code PARACAST and sign up at this special address, theparacast.com/gator. That's G-A-T-O-R, theparacast.com/gator. Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Question. What would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass, or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
This is Alex Jones with five good reasons you should consider buying a solar power generator. Number one, new climate legislation could easily double or triple your electric bill. Number two, our new energy czar wants to control how much power your electric company allows you to have. It's true. Total government control of electricity in the name of smart grid technology is coming. Number three, in some areas of the country, the power grid is dangerously overloaded. And now, new socialist legislation is only compounding the problem. Number four, dangerous weather is always a threat to local grids. Every year, thousands of families lose their power from weather-related outages. Number five, a solar power generator provides powerful backup insurance and peace of mind. Folks, I really believe in the solar power generators offered by Solutions from Science, one of my oldest sponsors. You can get more information at www.mysolarbackup.com. That's mysolarbackup.com. Remember, the government doesn't own the sun, so go to mysolarbackup.com or call 1-877-327-0365.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
I just want to hear more of it.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Genesis.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We return with David Hatcher Childress. He's author of Yeti, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants. We were talking in the last section about possible interbreeding. Chris O'Brien and Nick Redfern are the co-hosts. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Chris, you want to take David on that journey of possible interbreeding between Yeti and humans?
Yeah, that's one of the more interesting elements, I guess, in one sense of the word, of your book, David, is some very interesting stories, claims by people who say they've been abducted, both male and female, that they've been abducted by Bigfoots. And the one story that was particularly striking, I believe, was the woman, I think, in Russia who actually mated with a Bigfoot and had a son. Do you want to talk about that? That's a fascinating story.
Well, right. And that was in Dagestan. And in Mongolia, Central Asia, the Russian Republic areas, typically the Yetis there are known as an Almas, A-L-M-A-S, or some derivative of that. And it was, there was, during World War II, when all kinds of unusual things were going on, they realized that there was this family that was living in Dagestan, and they had captured a woman, a female Bigfoot, I should say, an Almas, and it was kept in this this village as a captive, but they somehow managed to tame this female Bigfoot, and it actually married somebody. Zana was the name they gave her. She was unable to speak, but she did have several sons. And in the 1950s, the Soviets actually did some studies with them, and there's a photograph in my book of a guy named Quit from 1954, and he's apparently some kind of a half-human, half-almost Bigfoot character, and, he was just a normal villager in this little town. I don't think he went out and became a rocket scientist or a doctor or anything like that. But, there's other stories like that too. I've got photos in the book of a very strange woman in Brazil who also looks like a part human, part ape woman. And whatever happened to her, we don't really know. In Nepal, there's a very famous story which happened in the 1920s of, a Sherpa gal named Noma Dingma, and she was in a remote yak pasture watching her yaks when she was allegedly abducted by a Yeti. And you have this whole story of a Yeti Lonely Hearts Club kind of a thing, where this lonely Yeti finds what is really, in a sense, sort of a lonely Sherpa girl, although she's not a willing captive of this Yeti. But he takes her up to a cave up in the mountains. And in Nepal, too, is what particularly with Nepal and Sikkim and Bhutan and other areas of the Himalayas and kind of eastern Tibet, you have these steep mountains and icy passes and whatnot, but you have deep ravines and river areas like the Aran Valley. And there's literally just within several thousand feet and within a few miles, this tremendous eco range of deep forest and even literally jungle, where then also snow-capped peaks and icy passes and things like that. So with her, she was then taken, rather than go up higher in the mountains to some icy snow cave, they're taken down into these river valleys that are deep, and they're heavily forested. And then there's caves there, she claimed. I mean, for years she lived with this Yeti. He would turn over, this is what she claimed, giant rocks in the streams and things. And under those rocks there would be all these little frogs and fishes, and he would gather them up and they would eat them. They lived this hunter-gathering existence. They slept in this cave. She described it, too, as, you know, she was really an unwilling wife of this Yeti. But over time, cold nights and things like that, yes, they began having sex. And she ultimately had a child by this Yeti. The story then, and there's several stories similar to this in both Bhutan and in Nepal, where they have a child, and there's another story similar where a man is kidnapped by a female Yeti, a Sherpa. They also have a child together. But over several years of being a captive of this Yeti, they devise a way to escape, and it's not easy. But somehow they're able, when there's a chance, to run, get across a big ravine or a stream, kick off a log or something that gives them access, and somehow escape back to their village, which isn't really that far, but still in those steep, remote mountains, you know, can be a several-day hike over a mountain pass. But what happens in each of these stories is the Yeti husband or wife, in this case, comes back to the village or shows this half-baby, half-Yeti, half human, half Yeti baby, but then it tears that baby up and kills it right in front of the father or the mother that's a human, ripping its arms and legs off, just tearing it into pieces, and then leaving. In some cases too, the villagers hunted down one of these Yetis and killed it because it was coming every night to this village where it was, you know, knew that its kidnapped ex-wife was living. That woman, Noma Dingma, who was very famous in Nepal, I mean, her life was shattered by being kidnapped by a Yeti, basically. And she entered a Buddhist monastery and lived the last of her life as a Buddhist nun. There's a famous story, too, about in Canada of a guy, a Canadian, back in the 20s, and he was kidnapped as well by a family of Yetis and held captive only for a few days. But they, too, seemed to want him to marry this Yeti, female, young Yeti that was there. And that's a famous story. You probably know that one, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stories like this, you know, where you get human interaction with these creatures. And that's one of the things that fascinates me, is that it makes me, well, suspect at least, that there's a connection between us and them. You know, you don't necessarily see Bigfoot having, you know, a fascination with, I don't know, wolves or bears or whatever, you know, but they seem to be fascinated with people, which somehow suggests that on some level, at least in my mind, that there's I guess, like a physical connection or a species connection somehow.
They are, yeah. I totally agree with you. They are fascinated by humans. They don't have fire. And this is one of the things that comes up continually with people who do interact with Yetis, Almas, Bigfoot, is that, yeah, they live in caves and these nests. They use tools and things. They do communicate somehow with clicks and sounds and things, but they're afraid of fire. Campfire will keep them away. They can't speak as we can, but they want to. They see humans as, you know, something that they wish they could attain. We have these special skills of speaking and interaction. We're wearing clothes and things. One of the stories too in Nepal is that the Yetis want to imitate humans. A famous story that's told in both Bhutan and Nepal is of some Yetis that are annoying some remote village. And so what the villagers do to get rid of them, and they know the Yetis are watching them, they have a big festival, and they make a big cauldron of beer, and they drink the beer, and they're getting drunk, and they're dancing. And then what they did was grab their machetes, these kukris are called in Nepal, these big sort of knife swords. They're really big. They're for chopping woods and stuff. And then they pretended to attack each other. And they were hacking each other with these kukris, but they were just doing it pretend. And then they left their kukris, these swords, on the ground, and there was still plenty of beer, and they all went to bed.
It sounds like they're just like any normal human, as a matter of fact. We have David Hatcher Childress. He's author of Yeti, Sasquatch, and Hairy Giants. Our co-host this week, Nicholas Redfern, Christopher O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi. Hey, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.